supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, Creeping Charlie sure seems to be creeping into a lot of lawns. We'll talk about why this invasive vine may be trying to cover your lawn and what you should do, if anything, about it. Otherwise, it's a fabulous phone call show, cats and kittens, at 1-888-346-9499. Bill, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Mike, how are you doing?
I am just ducky today, Bill. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Can't complain about the weather, that's for sure.
And where is Bill not complaining?
I am in western Chester County, not too far from you.
Oh, well, how do you know where I am?
I listen to your show all the time. Well, I know you travel around a lot, but I'm not too far away from your home turf. Let's put it that way.
All right. What can we do for Bill in Chester County, PA?
Well, in my ongoing battle with moles, which has been ongoing ever since I've lived at my lovely house here, I have tried many things. And then after a while of listening to your show, I tried some of the commercial castor oil products out there. And in my effort to save a few bucks along the way, I found out that I can buy gallons of bulk castor oil at a local food supply place. So I would assume it's food grade, since they sell it along with the other baking oils and things. And it's a very thick product, and I have attempted to use that the same way, but I don't seem to get quite the same results. And I'm wondering, is it possible that that castor oil is like bee stunk or processed in some way that it is not smelly to the moles?
Exactly correct. Ding, ding, ding. You win the big money. You get the land sweet, Bill. And the new frost-free freezer. Way back when, it was an old farmer's trick, whether it worked or not, to plant the castor bean plant if moles and gophers were being a problem on the farm. The castor bean plant, as almost everybody knows, is a beautiful tropical plant with incredibly poisonous berries. I mean, we talk about sometimes poisonous plants are really just plants that have some extra silica in their leaves. You know, they'll make your dog or cat sick for a day if they eat it. But the true castor bean contains the substance that is isolated to make the terrorist weapon, ricin.
Oh,
yeah. No, there are very toxic elements in true castor beans, unprocessed castor beans. When these things are grown commercially, first they're depoisoned. But it is felt that if the castor bean plant did work in its plant form, it's because nobody went near the beans knowing that they were very toxic. They would fall to the ground, they would ferment, and they would impart their nasty smell. Now, at some point in human history, quote, castor oil became a tonic, one of the old patent medicines to cure rheumatism, arthritis, lumbago, whatever, you know.
Right.
And to make that castor oil that was sold in pharmacies, it was deodorized. So that it wouldn't, you know, it still tastes pretty foul, is my understanding, but it doesn't have the scent. The products that are sold for mole and vole control, which are available from just about every garden supply company, both as spreadable powders and liquids, are depoisoned, but they are fully odorized. And you've probably noticed the difference if you used a packaged mole repellent. It smelled pretty bad the day you put it down.
Well, I didn't notice it to be that terrible, but definitely the stuff that I'm buying at the food grade stuff doesn't have a whole lot of a scent to it.
All you're doing is making sure that your moles don't have arthritis, rheumatism, or lumbago. You're giving them a vitamin, Bill. You're giving them a health tonic.
All right, so go back to the other stuff then if I want it to work.
What are you going to do with 5 gallons of castor oil now?
They're just gallons.
I wonder if you could run it through your car. I mean, you know, is it like
it's very sticky stuff, I'll tell you what.
Like a synthetic oil, there must be some. Maybe you should be taking a tablespoon every day. How's your arthritis, Bill?
I'm okay on that score, though.
But yeah, you figured it out, and that is exactly the case. When you use these products, you want to buy the highest concentration of active ingredient. The label will always say the active ingredient is castor oil. And there'll be varying percentages. So if things are relatively the same priced and one has a much higher percentage, it's going to be much more concentrated.
Sure, right.
And because it is non-toxic, what I would recommend is in the spring, before they really start setting where they're going to live for the season, spreading it really thickly, maybe, you know, two or three times over the course of a month, really impart
right.
that smell to the soil, and with any luck, they'll move to the neighbor's house, because otherwise moles are very difficult to get rid of.
Oh, tell me about it. I've been fighting this battle for 20 years now.
All right, Bill?
All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, sir. Take care.
Have a great day.
1-888-346-9499. Magda, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you very much. And before I say anything else, I want to tell you how much I appreciate your show.
Thank you very much. So where are you, Magda?
I'm located in Theodosia, Missouri, which is about an hour east of Branson, Missouri.
Oh, okay. Very good. Yeah. Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
You are, Magda, yes.
Okay, very good. Magda from Missouri. That's there you go. What can we do for you?
We have three trees here, which were planted within the last 2 and 3 years. One is a red maple, one is a purple smoke tree, and the other one, I think, is an azure maple. And they're all growing beautifully, except for one thing that I'm quizzing you on, and that is that in all three of the trees, one branch has gone crazy up, like 3 and 4 feet higher than anything else on the tree. So I'm wondering when I should prune those branches and how is the best way to prune them.
Okay, well, obviously maples are just about down in Missouri to go into their big show. And you never want to limit the amount of leaves on a maple when they're flaming in the fall. And you also don't want to prune anything in the fall. In general, the best time to prune deciduous trees is in the dead of winter or in early spring. I'm not sure how dead your winter is down there. You're in a pretty moderate climate.
We have days that are like winter.
Right.
So
and
probably January.
Exactly. And I'm going to suggest January or February, and it'll be, you know, nicer weather for you to do it in than it would be here in Pennsylvania. With the caution that maples are, people call them, quote, bleeders. Their sap runs very easily. Well, obviously, right? Maple syrup. So earlier than later, I would say January rather than February, because, you know, as soon as we start to get warm days, that sap is going to run. I mean, these are the same kind of maple trees in general as they tap for syrup. So you want to do the pruning before the sap starts running. Losing the sap wouldn't hurt the tree, but it makes a mess sometimes and it attracts ants.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you say these things have what you're describing what are called central leaders, these straight up branches coming up out of the tree. Yeah, and they are useless. They're not good for the tree. The only issue is how far off the ground is it to get to where you'd like to prune them off?
Oh, yeah, I can reach all of them. So I can get a tall ladder out there.
Okay. Here's the thing. When you're taking off a long branch, a big branch, especially if you're a civilian, you know, as opposed to a professional arborist, you want to take it off in small sections. So even though the intuition is to get up there right where that comes off the tree and cut it off there, that's what we call a widowmaker. That's the kind of branch that can split your noggin open and break your shoelaces. And also just the weight coming off can actually rip the bark down the side of the tree accidentally. So even though it seems counterintuitive, you want to get your ladder up as close to the top of those rogue branches as possible, and then using loppers, you know, those big pruning things, you want to cut off like a foot at a time, almost like you're working in the kitchen, you're making pasta or something. Cut off a foot, then cut off another foot, and then cut off another foot until you finally come down and make your final cut. And when you make your final cut, there'll probably be a shape coming off the tree into the branch, what we call the donut, where the branch kind of attaches to the tree. Make sure that donut, that branch color, stays on the tree. So when you're done, the last cut should not be flush to the tree. There should be a little knob coming off the tree still. So the coldest part of your season, if you have a rogue warm spell in January, which, you know, we've even had in Pennsylvania, wait till it's over. Wait till the weather has been cold for a week and is predicted to be cold for at least another week. And again, don't wait too long or you'll have a very sappy experience. And be careful. Make sure there's somebody holding the ladder, somebody working with you.
Okay, very good. I will do that. All right. Thank you, Mike.
All right, my pleasure. You take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I am once again honored to host the Interfaith Hospitality Network's Empty Bowl Dinner to benefit homeless families on Wednesday, November 16th at the Lutheran Theological Seminary on Chestnut Hill. Three seatings, 4 o'clock, 5:30, and 7 p.m. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website, because we'll be right back with Charlie Creeping, Soil Solarizing, and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we will discuss the vining weed known as Creeping Charlie. Is it just a bad guy, or does it have potential benefits in certain situations? We'll also give you a short course on what it takes to solarize your soil, if that's what you want to do to get rid of your weeds. But mostly it's your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499.
Dinesh. Yeah, hi, Mr. McGrath. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for making it. Where are you, sir?
I'm calling from Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania.
What can we do for you, sir?
So I have a property which is about 1.3 acres, and I have a fence. And it opens into a busy road, and there are a lot of like traffic noise. And I was just wondering if you can suggest me something like planting certain types of trees or shrubs which can reduce the noise from the road.
Right. Well, certainly what you want is something that's evergreen and, and something that's dense. Now, my personal predilection for something like this, where you're not trying to block a view, right? You're just trying to block noise.
And the view, too.
And the view. How high do you have to go?
At least 15 feet, 15, 20 feet.
Ooh, that now that starts to become problematic, because now we're talking about relatively tall trees. So, all right, if you were just going to block noise and you had a little bit of money to invest, and now is the time to do this, by the way, because live trees, generally nurseries and garden centers and tree farms, have fairly large specimens available at a reduced price this time of year because they don't want to have to carry them over through the winter.
Right.
And from your other perspective, this is also the best time to plant a tree. The survival rate of large trees, especially that are planted in the fall, is much greater than in the spring. So depending on the situation and your budget, I couldn't think of anything nicer than a staggered line of essentially Christmas trees.
Okay.
Things like blue spruce. I mean, they're because you're going to be looking at them.
Correct.
From one side.
Yes.
Now, the alternative for fast cover that I always recommend, and this is probably something that you really only would be available in the spring, would be ornamental grasses.
Okay.
Ornamental grasses are giant clumping grasses that, as the name implies, are very ornamental. They grow very quick. They don't grow laterally, but they do get wide. They do expand. And a healthy ornamental grass will grow from a plant that you buy in a pot in the spring to like 6 or 8 feet tall by the end of the season. You just have to be careful to wear long sleeves and gloves because some of the ornamental grasses, the blades are actually very sharp.
I see.
Which is actually even more useful if you want to keep deer away
That's another problem, yeah.
Well, deer will not eat ornamental grasses. You know, they are too tough and too sharp for them. Deer will not bother a blue spruce so much because if that's kind of the Christmas tree with the prickly needles, that's my favorite Christmas tree, and you'd always have to wear gloves when you hung your ornaments. It wouldn't be soft like a Douglas fir.
I see.
So the classic thing that people would recommend for your situation is either an arborvitae or a Leyland cypress. They are the tall evergreens that grow in a column-like shape. But, man, they are deer candy.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Deer love to eat those. So if you have a lot of deer roaming around, you're either going to be buying deer repellent by the truckload. And I mean by the like the tanker truck. You could have like a propane tanker filled with deer repellent, you know, in your driveway, and you'd spray the trees all the time. If you don't need a lot of height, I think the ornamental grasses are very underutilized for this kind of a situation, and they're magnificent looking. You got a lot of good choices, and you don't have to wait a long time for them to fill in and get tall. They will fill in a season, you know, but again, a staggered line of blue spruce would be expensive, but breathtaking. And then whatever you choose to plant, fall is better than the spring, both for survival and for cost.
Okay.
And never plant in a straight line. That's a rookie mistake. Because if you've seen these lines of arborvitae that are like eight trees in a row, number five always dies. Right?
Yes.
So you want to stagger them kind of like you rack pool balls. You want to have a line with what seems like too much space between the trees. And then behind those, a line of trees that's planted where those spaces are.
I see. Okay.
And that gives you better coverage, and it also gives you more wiggle room if something goes wrong with one of your trees.
I see. And where's the best place I can buy these trees in bulk?
A local nursery.
Local nursery.
Go around to your local nursery, describe what you're looking for, get different prices from them. But that's always your best bet, because if you do spend enough money, they will probably even come and do the install for you. And then if anything goes wrong, a reputable nursery is going to stand behind their stock.
Got it. All right. Thank you very much, sir. Really appreciate your help.
All right. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Susan, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky today, Susan. Thank you for asking. How are you?
Oh, very good. Thank you. I'm from Morristown. I'm calling today because my yard is mostly shade. I have some areas of part sun, and my driveway has full sun. And I'm able to take advantage of the full sun in the driveway by growing vegetables in large 10 to 20-gallon plastic pots.
Okay.
And to keep the weight of the pots down, I use 50% of store-bought potting mix with 50% of my own dirt and compost mix. And generally, I have a good harvest, but by the end of the season, the plants are usually having some disease problems. There's some tomato blight and I think some leaf spot and blossom rot. But my question is, at the end of the season, can I use my exhausted, perhaps disease-contaminated potting mix in my perennial gardens? Or also I'd like to perhaps use it to plant bulbs in my hard clay garden, just mix it into some of the hard clay soil. Are there any cross-contamination issues?
If you want good results in container gardening, you really want it to be no garden soil whatsoever. I mean, let's face it. I mean, you're even describing that your garden soil is pretty bad in the garden. So once you put it into a container, it not only doesn't get any better, it really makes the plants mad at you. So what I do is I buy big bags of, quote, potting soil, you know, soil-free mix without any chemicals, without any water-holding crystals or other nonsense, just peat, perlite, vermiculite, and compost. And then I'll mix in some extra perlite because I want to make that light soil even lighter. And then I want one-third of the mix to be compost for nutrition. And that'll give you your heaviness. But if you get that nice balance of compost, soil-free mix, and perlite for good drainage, I think you're going to see much better results on your plants and your tomatoes.
Okay, wonderful. And at the end of the season, would you recommend just putting it aside and adding fresh compost the following year, or just start fresh every year?
Well, let's say this year, for instance, I would take that dirt and, as you said, I would pour all that onto my perennial garden where it's not going to do any harm. You just put it on the surface of the soil.
Okay.
Okay. And then after that, in following years, you can reuse those containers. If you simply add a bit more soil-free mix, a little more perlite, a little more compost, but keep track of where you've planted your tomatoes. You can plant tomatoes 2 years in a row in a container, but if you do it by the third year, you're going to get the soil-borne wilts. They build up in containerized soil the same way they build up in garden soil. So keep good track, and every third year, move your tomato plants around. Or, in this case, if you don't have any room to move them around, make a fresh mix for those tomatoes. And then you can use that really good mix in other parts of your garden. Now, as to your spring bulbs, you know, clay soil is their enemy. So let's be honest. How heavy or light is this stuff in your pots?
In the pots, it's not really light, but it's not. It's 50% my soil, but I'm also using my homemade compost mix.
Mm-hmm.
But I put my bulbs all through my lawn, so my lawn is very clayey. So I thought the mix would at least improve it.
Oh, okay. Now, are you planting fresh bulbs?
I'm putting in daffodils, mostly daffodils.
Yeah, and you're just going to dig small bulb holes for them.
Yeah, I put them about 6 inches down, and I put them all over the place. And, yes, I just dig the individual holes.
Well, you know, improving the soil immediately around the bulb isn't going to do that much. If you want to do the extra work, what they need the most that you're not providing is good drainage, it sounds like. So rather than go wide, I would go deep. And
oh, okay.
You know, dig down 3 or 4 times further than you have to. Maybe you can use a power tool for this or something. And then, yeah, in the bottom of the hole, it sounds like anything would be better than pure clay. So if those roots can then extend down and go into soil that drains well, they're going to be very happy campers.
Okay, great.
And one thing I just want to mention, because it is bulb planting time in, you said you're in Moorestown and in, you know, in the, all of the mid-Atlantic. The best time to plant bulbs is right after Halloween. You don't want to plant them too early. And there's no need to feed bulbs when you plant them because the flower is already fully formed inside. The time to feed spring bulbs, which is counterintuitive, is after the flower drops off the following spring.
All right, fantastic. All right, well, thank you for all the information. I appreciate it.
All right, good luck to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Tom, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Tom. How are you?
I'm good. I'm calling from New York, and I'm not much of a gardener, and occasionally I must vent my frustrations on pruning, because I did in one bush this year that's only starting to recover now. So before I attacked my boxwoods and I got a row of Norfolk pines, I thought I'd check in with someone that knows a lot better about the best way to fertilize and maybe do some pruning, things like that.
Okay. Now, Tom, did you say you're in New York?
Yeah, Westchester County, just an hour north of New York City.
Oh, I know. It's a beautiful area up there. Now, you're saying a Norfolk pine, but they're not outdoor plants in your region. They're house plants. That's Norfolk refers...
Do I mean Norwich?
They're your trees, Tom. You know.
I know. Well, we definitely got boxwoods. I got those down pretty well. But they're a tight, it's an outdoor tree for sure. And it's been in the ground for 4 or 5 years now. And there are five of them in a row. And they have a, you know, they're kind of a dense exterior of needles.
Okay.
I thought they were Norfolk, but that just shows you, huh?
No, that, and a lot of people are confused by that. You see the... you know, they're the indoor house plants that sometimes people decorate as Christmas trees. And
yeah.
People get confused because they think Norfolk means Virginia, but it's actually an island next to Australia. And a lot of times people will get these things as Christmas presents. They'll plant them in the ground, and it's really ugly. All right. So we don't need to know what you have. You have various evergreens and boxwoods. Now, my first question to you is, why do we have to prune the trees?
Well, I'm not as concerned about pruning the, for lack of a better term, the evergreen, as I am just making sure they're fed properly and all that. The boxwoods, though, are in a row in front of the front windows of our house. I want them to be healthy, but I want to keep them at a certain height.
Trees really don't need much, if any, feeding. What trees need is to make sure that their bark is open to the air. If you use wood mulch in your landscape, it's important to pull it back from not only the bark of the tree, but from the any above ground roots of the tree. The healthiest trees will have their root flare showing above ground. They will not look like lollipops. They will not have any mulch touching the bark. If you have mulch touching the bark of a tree, that tree will die an early death. Other than that, I mean, these big evergreens and deciduous trees, I mean, look at the forests, man. Nobody's going in and feeding them.
Right.
Now, as to the boxwoods, if they truly are a true boxwood, they're a quirky kind of a plant. They definitely suffer if there's any mulch around their roots. They like to be growing out of bare ground. And although they are kind of an evergreen, they are one of the only evergreens that wants an alkaline soil as opposed to an acidic soil. So there are a lot of products that are sold for fertilizing hollies and evergreens that acidify the soil. They are death to boxwoods. Where you live, I'm sure if you don't, somebody near you burns wood over the winter, right? For heat or for fun?
Yeah, we do.
Well, your boxwoods would love a dusting of your wood ash in the spring.
In the spring, you said?
Yeah, in the spring, because everything's going dormant now. Even if it stays green, nothing should be fed at this time of year. You never feed a sleeping plant. But I would dust them. I would put down a good, like, half an inch of wood ash around their roots, get rid of any mulch that's under there in the spring. And then as the boxwoods begin to grow, when they put on their new growth, that is the best time to train them. The best looking shrubs are pruned topiary style, where instead of going in and going crazy and maybe you kill an area and you don't get regrowth, you get that browned out area that becomes impossible. Much better to just use hand pruners and just do a little bit at a time. This is something you can even do once a week to not only keep them the height they are, but gradually over the course of a summer, you can reduce them in height by like 6 inches to a foot. But not all at once. Gradually, as they're growing, as they're strong over the early spring and the early summer, that is the best time to be doing any work. You don't want to prune anything now because you could still stimulate new growth, and that growth would be very weak over winter, very susceptible to winter injury. This is why God created the World Series. You're supposed to sit inside and watch baseball. You're not supposed to go out and be hacking away at your plants in the fall.
Thank you.
All right. Good luck, sir.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will once again happily host the annual Empty Bowl Dinner to benefit homeless families. You get to choose a unique, locally handcrafted bowl and then fill it as many times as you like with delicious soups donated by area restaurants. It all happens on Wednesday, November 16th at the Lutheran Theological Seminary in Chestnut Hill. Now, don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with Charlie Creeping, Soil Solarizing, and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will get to the topic of the creeping vine known as Creeping Charlie, ground ivy, lawn ivy, gill over the ground, and more other names than we have time to list. Is this thing, is it just an invader, or does it perhaps have some admirable qualities? We're also going to give you a short course on solarization, if that's your weed-killing option. And it's all coming up after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Josh, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for being had, Josh. Where are you?
I'm in Kennett Square, PA.
Okay, just outside of Philadelphia.
Yes, sir.
All right. What can we do for Josh in Kennett Square?
we just bought a house, and there are, along the property line, there are tons of great tall pine trees to provide shade.
Right.
But the bottom 10 or 15 feet is removed. It's just the trunk. So I'm wondering if there's a good screen tree or a bush or something that I can plant there to give us a little more privacy, and also the best time of year to plant that, if it's too late in the season now to plant anything.
Yeah, probably what happened is not so much that the lower branches have been removed, but what happens with these big evergreens is once they begin shading each other or shading their own bottoms, the bottom branches brown out. And it looks ugly, so eventually they either fall off or people cut them off so they don't have to look at them. And then the branches, the real branches, start about 4 or 5 feet up on the tree. Is that what you got?
Yep, it's a little bit higher than that, but exactly what it sounds like what's happened, yep.
Yeah, so one thing you have to remember is you already have an extensive root system in the ground there, because I'm presuming these are very tall trees at this point. Okay, so presume that you have, a very extensive root system. So you want to be careful here. You don't want to plant whatever it's going to be too close to the existing trees. You get too clever here, you might wind up killing some of the big trees. And then, of course, that line would be impossible to, like, hugely expensive to duplicate. So what I would suggest you do is look at that row of trees like the last row of balls in a pool rack. And okay, then moving forward and getting as far away from those trees as possible, what I would suggest is you plant ornamental grasses that are going to get nice and wide and nice and tall, but in the spaces in between the trees, if you know what I mean, imagining that rack of pool balls, and maybe even coming forward and doing another staggered line of ornamental grasses. They will grow very rapidly. They will fill in the space much more quickly than any nice tree can. They will, you know, be there all year long. You know, they're not going to drop their leaves or anything like that. You can prune them back to give them shape, or you can just let them go crazy to fill in the space. And they are the longest living, fastest growing thing to give you cover. But again, I want to make sure that you understand the further away they are from that line of trees, the safer it's going to be. And quite honestly, the more they're going to function the way you want. One of the biggest mistakes in landscaping is people planting things too close to other plants and not really allowing for the final size of the plant. For instance, as you shop around for the kind of ornamental grasses that you think are going to fit into your landscape, look at the final size and then go out there with like some strings and some stakes and create little islands that'll show you how big and wide these things will be, and you'll see that they can be way in front of that line of trees and still give you exactly what you want.
Okay, great.
All right, and if you can find them now, you can plant them now, otherwise in the spring.
Awesome. Thanks very much, Mike.
All right. Good luck, Josh.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Marissa, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
It's great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here, Marissa. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am just ducky, thank you. Where is Marissa good?
I am in Langhorne, Pennsylvania.
Just outside of Philadelphia.
Yes, it is.
What can we do for Marissa in Langhorne?
Well, about 8 years ago, we moved to a new house, and it is infested with thistles. We've tried pretty much everything, from chemicals to cutting them to pulling them to perlite, and nothing seems to work. They just kind of run rampant.
Well, thistle, I mean, it's the national flower of Scotland. I mean, isn't it beautiful when you have all those purple flowers adorning your landscape?
Not when you have about a 30 feet by like 20 foot side of a hill just covered and the front yard and you're trying to make gardens.
Okay, so generally whenever people have a weed problem like this, and thistle is like running bamboo, it is a weed with tremendous underground root systems. So mm-hmm. you have an area that you wished would be a garden, and you have a hillside. Let's say that you get the thistle off the hillside. What's going to replace it? What's going to stabilize that hill?
Well, on the hillside, we've tried wildflowers, but they never actually take. Part of the problem with the backyard is it's all a bunch of fill dirt, so there's not enough nutrients for it. And in the front, my mom, like, she plants so many flowers and nothing will choke them out.
Okay. Now, for the hillside, if that's an isolated area, I know this isn't probably what you want to hear, but I think the thistle's probably doing a good job there. You know, it does attract pollinators. It does feed birds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like you're going to be trying to grow tomatoes there or anything like that.
Yeah.
Right now, that's a very useful plant in that place. And again, finches must come in and go wild at the end of the season, right?
Yeah, we get quite a few birds on the back.
Yeah, and that's why. I mean, so I realize it's on a lot of wanted posters or not wanted posters at the post office, but in a case like that, that underground root system is a great stabilizer of a hillside. Now, tell me about the area you wish to be garden.
Well, it's in the front of the house and I guess along the side. My mom's planted irises and lilies and just a bunch of other stuff that... And she really fills out her gardens. Like, it's absurd. She's really big on putting newspaper and mold, and we just can't get the thistles, I guess, to die off.
Okay, so she does get her plants in the ground, but the thistles come up all around them?
Yeah.
There are three options. The first one, it sounds like you've tried, but I don't know if you've tried it enough, which is the rope-a-dope method. As soon as the thistles come up in the spring and you recognize that distinctive kind of almost thorny stem,
yeah,
you do not pull it. Pulling stimulates some sort of a hormone in the root system that actually strengthens the plants. And so what you do is you would have the option of mowing it down, or you can individually prune them out. And you would do that for an entire season, never allowing the leaves to get fully developed. You're making the root system expend energy, but not get anything in return. And don't use any fertilizer near that area either.
Okay.
The second year, the thistle would come up very weak. And that's when you really then can go to town. You would spend like the first half of the season doing the same thing. And then as the thistle got weaker and the summer got hotter, you could then move on to one of the two non-toxic herbicides that are out there, the sprays that are based on iron or herbicidal soaps. And they're going to work best on weakened plants in the hottest, driest stretch of the summer. And then by the third year, the thistle would be an occasional thing that you would pull up and laugh at and taunt and take its lunch money. The more passive option is to have a whole load of arborist wood chips delivered and smother that area, really just like 6 inches deep, and just leave it on there for 2 years. That would smother the thistle underground, and the wood chips would decompose, and by the time the thistle was gone, you would have more viable soil out there to work with. The third option is very complex. It's solarizing the soil. You would till up that entire area. You would level it. You would saturate it with soil. You would pull 1 or 2 mil clear plastic sheeting very tightly over top of the area, put all the edges down really tight with bricks, and let that cook for an entire summer.
Yeah, I don't think she would want to do that because she spent the last 8 years, you know, putting down mulch and newspaper every year. So,
okay.
The soil's pretty good, and, like, she gets a really nice garden, but...
Right. Well, that the soil solarization is the only thing, and, you know, in Langhorne, you'd have to do it for the entire summer to make sure you solarized out all those rhizomes, but it would work as long as it was a nice, hot, and dry summer. You know, the other option is if you want to just keep attacking the thistle directly, keep pruning it out before you really get true leaf development. And after a year, it'll be so weak, it'll be pitiful.
Okay. Good to know.
All right.
All righty.
Good luck, Marissa. It's a very tough foe.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Okay. Take care.
All right, you too. Bye.
All right, as promised, it is time for the question of the week. Should you chase away Creeping Charlie? Playing the part of our producer, Alexis Landis, this week, who is not with us, she is out, is Alicia Lester, our intern, following a proud tradition of our interns stepping in every once in a while to help with the question of the week. Alicia, would you be so kind as to read this week's question?
Sure. Holly in Silver Spring writes, I unknowingly made a huge mistake by mowing over a patch of Creeping Charlie last fall, and it has now taken over almost all of our backyard. We have small children, so we wanted to solarize the entire yard with clear plastic sheeting instead of spraying poison. Is it too late for that this year? If it is too late, when should we try? Are there any other methods that are safe? We were hoping to have a nice lawn by next spring, but now I think that might be impossible.
Well, first, you didn't spread the Creeping Charlie, Holly. Your mowing may have spread some of the seed around, but this weed, also known as ground ivy, lawn ivy, and gill over the ground, mostly spreads via underground rhizomes, often overtaking lawns that are cut too short or that have to tolerate a lot of shade.
She does have to wait until next year to try and solarize, right?
Yeah. As we explained in detail in a previous question of the week, solarizing can destroy the absolute worst weed seeds, disease spores, and invasive rhizomes lurking in soil. But it's got to be done precisely and correctly. The area has to be tilled up, or at the very least, scalped down to bare soil. And if that's what we're doing, we want to see dirt blowing out the back of the mower. Then it has to be leveled, absolutely saturated with water, and covered tightly with clear plastic. And here in the mid-Atlantic, that takes an entire summer of sun to achieve the desired result of cooking every bad thing in the soil. Grubs, disease spores, weed seeds, and invasive rhizomes to absolute death, making this a technique much better suited to reviving a single bed than an entire yard. And effective solarization requires full sun or close to it. So if the area is shady, solarization is not a viable option.
And Creeping Charlie is a weed of shady places, right?
Oh, yeah. It also does well in the sun, but its specialty is to thrive in the kind of shade that makes lawn grasses struggle. Now, her other options would have included tearing everything up and sowing a fresh run of cool season grass seed, but she would have had to done that back in August. So laying sod in the spring is going to be her next shot at a fast cure. Now, sod is much more expensive than seed, but it really does well in the spring, when seeding cool season grasses is a waste of time and money. Sod is a great choice if the area is small, or if you can just afford it, and for lawns where kids and or dogs are going to want to play right away. And the installers would remove all of that existing Charlie as they prepare the soil for installation.
But I hear a but coming.
Yeah, Creeping Charlie is invasive, but it's also very useful as a ground cover. It thrives in the shady spots where lawn grasses struggle. It prevents erosion, doesn't need mowing, and it produces beautiful purple flowers in the spring.
Any chance those flowers will attract pollinators?
Yes, the hairy-footed flower bee, which, like Charlie, has emigrated to the U.S. from Europe, and several species in the Osmia genus, the prime pollinators of blueberries and orchard fruits. Very good bees to have around, and very gentle ones, too.
Now, we also heard from Susanna in Minneapolis, who writes, my lawn is two-thirds covered with Creeping Charlie. My lawn guy recommended applying weed killer this fall. I don't want to do that as I hate chemicals, and he says my lawn would be all muddy in the spring. So, if I use the 20 Mule Team Borax homemade herbicide solution as described in your A to Z article on Creeping Charlie, when would be the best time to apply it? Or would you just leave Charlie there to finish killing the lawn and be happy ever after? Not counting my having to periodically weed the flower beds.
Yeah, researchers found that a very specific concentration of the element boron in the form of that classic laundry additive, 20-Mulotene Borax, is more effective on Creeping Charlie than chemical herbicides. You'll find the exact recipe in that previous Creeping Charlie article we keep referencing. As with most herbicides, it's going to work best when the weather is hot and dry. So in Mini Snota, she would go after Charlie with the Mule Team in July and then be ready to sow fresh cool season grass seed in mid-August before the soil starts to cool down.
But both of our listeners acknowledge that they have more of this ground cover than grass. That's going to make establishing and defending a new lawn a lot of work.
Oh, yeah. Especially if the areas in question are shady, like we said. So maybe they should consider making peace with Charlie. Install strong edging to keep it out of flower beds and neighboring yards, and then just enjoy the aroma. It's actually a member of the mint family. The beautiful flowers, and yes, those helpful pollinators.
And the extra blueberries those pollinators will provide.
Well, those sure were some interesting ideas about leaving a creeping ground cover sleep, now weren't they? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to creep me out if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Always please include your location when you email us. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares about your location, but where you will find the answers to all of those garden questions you were going to email us about. Audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz keep our webpage creep free. Our intern, Alicia Lester, is in charge this week, while Alexis Landis, who normally produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia, is, well, she's creeping around somewhere. Our editor is Al Banks. I'm creepy and I'm kooky, mysterious and spooky. I'm altogether ooky. My name is Mike McGrath, and I'll see you again next week. How close can you place plants next to your house? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal the minimum distance everyone should observe, plus your observant phone calls.